Hello and welcome back. This is Victoria Duda from Zenith Lifestyle, bringing you the Metaphysical Podcast, Episode 4, The Law of Attraction, A Critical Look. So last time we have spoken about the power of thoughts and seen that our reality that is within, our reality that we create with our thoughts is indeed very powerful and can make changes both within and without. And there is a quite fashionable and widespread application of that idea today that we can call the law of attraction. And that basically says that whatever you're thinking is causing an attraction to similar things into your life. If you're thinking about positive things, if you're thinking about certain positive things, that will attract those positive things into your life. But in the same way, if you're thinking negatively, if you're concentrating on the things that you lack, that you don't want in your life, then it's going to be precisely those things that you will attract. And today we are here. I have as a guest Sandra Swan from Sandra Swan Coaching. And she's a life coach who is coaching people who want to fall in love with their work. So welcome, Sandra.
Hello.
And what we will do today is we try to take a critical look, okay, at this law of attraction and ask ourselves really seriously, can that work? Can reality be so simple that all we have to do is sit back, relax, visualize, and enjoy the manifestation? And it does indeed seem that it is an idea that's not just a recent fashion. So I digged a little bit into history, as I like to do, and realized that it seems to be one of the oldest thoughts that humanity has, because there is indication for that. If you look at the ancient cave paintings that come from thousands, 10,000s, or even older years ago, then what we see is people painted scenes of hunts. Anthropologists of all times have asked, why did they do that? And there seems to be a pattern, and the pattern seems to be that whenever they wanted to achieve a certain success in a hunt, they wanted to hunt a certain animal, they painted that onto the cave wall before they went onto the actual hunting event. And if you ask what could be the purpose of that, if you think of the magical thinking that was inherent of that time, then you can see that, well, they were actually literally visualizing, they were creating a visual image of what they wanted to achieve later in their hunt. So we can look at those paintings as the most ancient and the oldest and the original application of the law of attraction. And it has survived. It has survived all up into our time and had a revival in the end of the 19th century, actually, when the New Thought movement started. And that was the movement that culminated in the publication of The Secret. It started about 100 years before that certain authors brought forth the idea that if you think in a certain way, that will have results in your life. It was Prentice Mulford who wrote in his essays in the end of the 19th century the idea that all the good thoughts will produce good effects in your life and all the ill thoughts will produce ill effect on your life. And one of the first big best-selling books of the whole self-development movement of the 20th century was a book on the law of attraction from Napoleon Hill, who published in 1937 the book Think and Grow Rich. And he was saying in his book that if you want to achieve certain results, if you want to be rich, if you want to prosper, you have to control your thoughts in the right direction. And not just the thoughts themselves, but also the energy behind your thoughts. So that was an idea that became very widespread today, and we know it mainly from The Secret, which was published in 2006, 2007, and became, I would say, really, really popular, mainstream popular thinking in certain circles. So what would you say, Sandra, like among your clients, what kind of resonance does this thought have? Are people interested in that? Do they ask you a lot? And what is their reaction to it?
What I've noticed is more and more people have read The Secret.
Right.
Not so many are familiar with Napoleon Hill, although actually, interestingly, a friend of mine whose husband was really not into the law of attraction in any way, shape or form, she sort of shoved his book under his nose and he started to read it. And that was the book that for him resonated.
Mm.
And so from that point onwards, he actually started to get very interested in challenging his thoughts and thinking more positively about what direction he wanted to go. And it was actually after reading that book that he came to see me to take charge of his career. With regards to The Secret, more and more people are reading that, as I say, and there was a documentary film that many people have seen. And lots of people have heard of The Secret, but I'm not sure that many people really understand what that means.
Yeah. It's always the danger with things that have become too popular, isn't it, that people catch the surface.
Yeah.
And then the question is, how many people catch the depth of it? And I think that is also the importance of our discussion today, that to understand what really is behind it.
Yeah.
Yes, I was bringing some material for today thinking, what if we just looked at it first from a psychological point of view? Because if you look at this idea that someone is thinking positive thoughts and expecting positive results, even without thinking of any metaphysical laws behind it, we can just think of what would that produce psychologically. So what would happen to the psyche of a person who says, okay, I'm believing in this and this is how I'm going to conduct my life. And the interesting thing is that the more I thought about that, the more I realized that, ironically, that would put the person into the perfect position to achieve good results.
Absolutely.
Regardless what the universe is doing. But for a person to believe that their thoughts are that powerful is putting them in a position of empowerment.
Yeah.
It becomes what psychologists might call a self-fulfilling prophecy, because they would do everything in a internal locus of control.
Locus?
So in psychologists use this word, locus coming from the Latin place.
Okay.
So when you talk about the internal locus of control, you mean that your place of control is within you. You're a person who believes that everything or most of the things that are happening to you in your life are governed by you. It's an internal thing. It's in your hands. So a person with a very strong internal locus of control would say, I am the master of my destiny. A person with an external locus of control would say, oh, it's all up to God and the government and my parents. And these are the people who are likely to blame others if things go wrong. And it was very interesting because the psychologist put up a graph of what is the philosophy, what is the locus of control of a very successful person. And there is a distinction, namely, that very successful people, they tend to attribute their successes to themselves. So if something goes right in their life, they say that was because I was thinking positively and because I was doing all the work and because I'm a genius. If something goes wrong, then they tend to attribute that to external factors. They say, yes, my business failed because the economy went down, but next time I try, I will succeed. And people who are very pessimistic and who are very disempowered, they tend to, whenever something goes right, attribute it to luck, to something external. And when something goes wrong, they attribute it to themselves. Those are the people who say, oh, no, I wasn't so good at the test. I was just lucky with the questions.
Yeah.
But if something goes wrong, they say, oh, I'm so guilty.
Yeah.
Oh, it's always me.
Yeah, it's always my fault. Yeah.
So there is a... We can learn from that, basically.
Yeah.
We can learn that let's be smart and let's attribute good things to ourselves, which gives us this empowerment that, we are the captain of our ship. We are the captain of our souls. It makes people more resilient. So that's the first thing that came into my mind when I was thinking of these things. And also the interesting thing is that other people will react to you differently. So they did some studies... Rosenthal and Jacobson did a study with teachers, and they went to school and they told teachers that certain kids in their class are very intelligent And they are the tests, and there are some geniuses sitting among you, and you know, pay attention to those kids because they have particular talents. They didn't. They were just randomly chosen. But what the study showed that these kids, at the end of the year, perform better, but not just for those teachers, but also objective tests.
Wow.
So it came back to them that they were treated. Mm. There was an expectation effect. They were expected to perform better, so they did.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, that's also, isn't it, a little bit of law of attraction in some way?
Yes, definitely.
But what a responsibility that puts on teachers and parents, you know, not to expect bad things from your kid, but just the best.
Yeah.
So I think that if you look at it like that from a psychological point of view, then yeah, law of attraction is a great idea. But of course, what really interests us, I think, deep down is this also true metaphysically? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is the universe really feeding back to you what you're thinking?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know about you, Sandra, but I'm thinking that here it's probably a bit more complicated than what the mainstream wants us to believe.
I think there are a number of factors in place.
Yes.
For sure. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I'm sometimes thinking of it because people say that the law of attraction is a little bit like the law of gravity, that it works each time. And I'm thinking to myself, yes, that's certainly true. The law of gravity says that if you drop an object, it will fall to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
But what if that object, for example, is a bird? And you're holding a little bird in your hand, and then you're opening your palms.
Uh-huh.
Is it going to fall to the ground? No, it's going to fly away.
Yeah.
But I like that example because it shows that the law of gravity is, of course, still working.
Yeah.
But there are other laws kicking in, yeah, like aerodynamic and the bird biology or whatever.
Yeah.
And it might be something like that with the law of attraction as well.
Yeah, it's a really good point. I hadn't actually thought of it like that. I love the analogy of the bird. It's brilliant.
What do you think kicks in as well? You had crises when it didn't work?
Well, I think that I question whether the law of karma kicks in.
Yes.
Not that I know a lot about the law of karma, but... that there's always a question mark for me as to whether or not there's something else out there that's guiding your destiny, if you like.
Absolutely.
As well as your own thoughts, you know, alongside your own thoughts. And yes, we know that we have will, you know, our own will is at play in any given situation. We always have a choice. But I'd like to know a little bit more about the law of karma and perhaps what you think that holds in terms of law of attraction.
I totally agree. Yes, I make similar, observations. And the more I study these things, the more I'm convinced that the past is very powerful. You know, it's our personal past, but it's also our soul past from many incarnations, if you want to put it like that. And if we have something to do, we will have to do it. So we can visualize one thing, but if it's on our evolutionary interest to experience something, then that experience will kick in.
Yeah.
And we will have to learn the lesson that is involved in that experience.
I think that certainly for me, you know, practicing law of attraction in the way that I do, I'm very mindful of the thoughts that I think. And there are times when I get even more abundance than I was expecting. So if I put out a positive thought that I want something to happen for me, then if I'm in a really good place and my vibration, if you like, is a high level of vibration and I'm feeling in that great positive expectation state that you need to be to attract what you really want, what often happens to me and those of the people that I know around me that practice also is that actually what comes back is even greater than you could have imagined.
Yes.
So you know what's going on there. You know, it's not a direct correlation as to the level of expectation you're putting out. You're actually getting more back.
How boring would it be if we would see it in advance and we would get exactly that?
Yes.
And I think that's what, if people are more aware of that, they can keep their eyes more open because they visualize something which actually might come back to them, but not in exactly the same form as they were expecting it, because, yes, as you say, there might be something even greater waiting them.
Yeah.
And might not come from a simple source, but might come as a chain of events. You have to wait maybe a couple of turns around the corner to see actually what will be the final result. But if you lose your concentration and your high vibration in the meantime, then you will never experience what is behind the corner.
Yeah, that's very true. The number of times that I've, you know, thought about something in my imagination, and what I thought hasn't come about, but I'm still in a good vibration state. I'm still feeling happy and so on. And other events just, they work out. And then at the end of the trail, if you like, you know, you receive so much. It's just such a more than coincidence. You know, there's so many things that come about that you just cannot have imagined would ever have done. Mm. But as you say, if you lose it, you lose the vibe and you get disappointed. Oh, this thing didn't happen. Oh, yeah, it's not worked for me.
Yeah.
Then, yeah, you're off.
Mm. And I think the most powerful application of it is actually to look at the entire cosmic circle. So for me, the most powerful positive thinkers are the ones who believe in evolution of consciousness and evolution of the soul. And I think that comes back in many different schools of thought, in many different philosophies. You know, like Buddhism thinks that we all have the Buddha potential in us. And no matter what we are doing, we will become Buddhas. It's just a question of time. It might take a couple of eons, but you will become Buddha. You will achieve the highest perfection. So what that does actually is that you are putting your entire life, your entire existence, your entire series of existence into the most positive light that there is. You know, expecting that you will be a perfect human being, a perfect consciousness at the end of the road. It doesn't matter how many years it takes. That is extremely powerful.
Yeah,
I think that's where the really, really the positive thinking comes in, that yes, we might still not succeed because there is some karmic trace of some past trauma or whatever kicking in, but that is still just, you know, a little thing compared to the big picture that is inevitably leading us to evolving into the highest level of consciousness.
It's interesting though, isn't it? Because if you take the thought that let's just divide the world into East and West, and you take the view that the East, generally speaking, believe in reincarnation and life's after death, and the West, generally speaking, doesn't. The West has evolved on a physical level, you know, much, much faster than those than the East has.
Yes.
You know, and that's
where you put your attention.
Well, you know, is it about the fact that actually, if you think you've only got one lifetime, then you've got to hurry up and do this thing quick.
Yes.
Or, you know, if you have a view that, you know, you're going to come back again, actually, you can take your time.
It depends on how you look at it, isn't it? I think it gives a lot of Easterners the excuse to lay back and relax and not do anything about it. But it also gives a lot of Westerners who don't believe in reincarnation the kind of cynicism that what's the point, because they know they don't have the time. Actually, what is really interesting, that I was looking into this reincarnation of thought a lot lately, and I will make a list maybe for one of the podcasts or put it on the internet, or I will make a list of how many Westerners actually believed throughout the Western history of thought in reincarnation. It's surprising how many.
Really?
It seems to be that, yes, it was suppressed in the mainstream religion in the West.
Right.
And then it was suppressed by the mainstream science. But the esoteric philosophy of the West that survived in secret societies, that was always also based on an evolution of consciousness.
So. And apparently something I learned relatively recently was that Napoleon Hill's book, Think and Grow Rich, wasn't it?
Yes.
That there was that esoteric take on it,
yes,
when it was first published, but actually it was taken out because it wasn't seen to be popularist view, and it, you know, it wasn't acceptable.
Well, I think that's a lot of times true, because what I miss from the popular law of attraction, the way it's presented in the media, is that it's talking about the individual. It's talking less about universal good. And in esoteric thought, in secret teachings, in just common moral sense, to be honest, I think we are not isolated individuals. You know, we are part of, we are interconnected. And if we talk about the universe, and if we're talking about the universe that is, you know, giving our thoughts back or reacting to our thoughts, then it's also logical that that universe is not looking at us as a separate entity, but it's looking at us as part of the entire the creation.
Mm-hmm.
So it will you know, look at our interests, but it will look at other people's interests as well. And the more something serves the greater good, the more the universe will support it.
Right.
I don't know what your experience about that is, but if someone is asking, visualizing something that is not just helping them but others, then the power of it is extremely, infinitely bigger.
Mm-hmm. I absolutely agree. Certainly in my own experience, you know, if I'm serving others, or if my goal is to help a community, and the more people that you're serving, the richer the rewards come back, almost.
So absolutely,
you know, if it's one person, that's great, and it you know, it has an effect. But again, if Napoleon Hill talked about this, actually, was the mastermind effect. You know, if you bring in more than the power of one person, you get the greater of the sum of the parts. So certainly, if there's resonance with a community of people, and that there's some kind of service involved with others, then I've definitely noticed that the rewards back, if you like, are greater.
Yes. Yeah, I'm making the same experience. So the universe is not serving selfishness. It's serving interconnectedness.
Yeah.
It's serving the community.
Yeah.
That's what makes us happy, doesn't it, when we are happy as part of a community?
I mean, just a really little example. Yesterday, I ran a workshop. And I always set an intention before my workshops, which, you know, that the right people come together and the right people are in the room and the right people are kind of, you know, get to meet each other.
Yes.
And there were only six people at the workshop. And of the six people there, honestly, every person where they were sitting was the right person they should be sitting next to. You know, the two guys ended up sitting together, which might not be surprising, but they ended up being able to help each other over a particular issue they had. The two girls on one side, two on the other. They both had the same similar issues to each other, and it was just perfect. You know, absolutely perfect.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yes. So probably just visualizing something with the intent to leave it open to the universe to do it the best way for everybody will greatly add to it.
I didn't know the people on the workshop mostly. Yes. I mean, I knew of them, but I didn't know why they would need to be sitting in the seats that they sat in and the person that they sat next to. Absolutely, and there's no way I would have known. Mm. So, yeah.
So it doesn't support selfishness. And I also think it doesn't support laziness.
Mm.
What I notice is that some people use that three steps recommended to attract things as almost as an excuse to lay back. You know, do the visualization and then lay back and relax and not do anything about it. Which is missing the point, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes, because, you know, they might just hear a little bit of inside voice urging them to do something, and they might miss that. They might just lay back and not do the action. I was thinking of athletes, actually, because it's quite remarkable how many athletes are using the law of attraction and how many athletes are visualizing.
Yes.
And, you know, the great Olympic champions, they all say, I wouldn't have won that Olympic medal without the visualization part.
Yeah. They visualize it over
and over. They visualize it over and over again. And it's as important as the physical training. But this is where, where I'm bringing in the athletes, but they don't do it instead of the physical training. So imagine an athlete who would just sit in the corner the whole time, not do the race, not do any training, but they just say, oh, it's just the law of attraction. I'm just visualizing. Of course, that wouldn't work, would it?
No.
And I think it's the same with everything, that we do our work. We do the best what we can to do our own bit, our own actions. Mm. And then maybe even after that, visualizing is a good idea. Mm. You know, that I've done my part and now I'm inviting the universe to bring more, you know, to fill out the missing gaps. And there are, I think, quite objective studies and experiments that show that this kind of thing works, aren't there?
Yeah. So there was a great experiment that happened, I think, back in the early 2000s, the Peace and Tension Experiment. Mm. It was in America, and they brought together a large group of, I think, transcendental meditation guys and girls. Mm. And with the aim to focus on peace. And given that they were in some of the major cities in America, I think New York was one of them, they realized that they did an experiment with the authorities, the official authorities, monitoring the amount of time that these people were meditating. So they were meditating for about 15 minutes and they were sort of focusing their thoughts first for another 15 minutes before the experiment and then afterwards for another 15 minutes. So in total, it was about 30, 40 minutes of time. And so during that time, they monitored the crime rates. And I think also the incidents of ambulance call-outs and that sort of thing. And they realized that the rates of crime and the incidents, the general major incidents that happened in the city that these people were meditating in over that exact time went down.
And it's quite well documented, isn't it?
I believe so. There's been a number of reports. Yeah,
The data appeared in, I believe, in the Washington Post.
And
you can see the graphs. It's quite amazing that the more you meditate on one graph, which is going up, the more the crime rate goes
down.
And
I think it's to do with the percentage of people in the population. So I think there's a critical mass that you have to overcome.
How inspiring is that?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it just shows that this is a typical example of when you're meditating for the greater good, you're meditating for others. So the universe will help you in the maximum way to achieve that. I think it's a good idea for all of us that go on and keep doing our visualization and include that intention to actually visualize, whom am I going to help with that? Maybe you have a certain person or a certain type of person in your mind, or you just think of a future group of people that will grow and grow and that you can help with your intentions more and more. I bet that will increase the effectivity of what you're doing. The other idea would be to include, I find that also from personal experience working with clients, that if you include in your visualization the first steps that you're actually going to take, That is very powerful because you're setting the intention, you know, you're showing the universe that you are walking your own walk, you're willing, and also it is helping you to fulfill it because you have seen it in your mind, and then it will be easier to do the first step.
And it only has to be baby steps, you know, the very first step.
And you can chunk down the big picture, you know, to little edible chunks and find something that you are immediately going to be able to do.
And something that you feel really attracted to yourself, something that really means a lot to you, something that lights up your heart, you know, not something
gets you
feel
going.
Not something you feel you should do, but something you really would love to do.
No, I do feel really inspired. I think there is a lot behind it. I think we can summarize it up like that. You know, this is not just wishful thinking. This is very powerful. But we all are in a school. It's a school of life where we learn how to make it more effective every day and in every way.
Oh, yeah.
So thank you very much for coming.
Oh, it's been
a pleasure. Thank you very, very much for listening. And I hope you will be back in 1 month at the next full moon. Thank you.